update. Don't go anywhere. The sports page is next.
Starts in 3, 2, 1.
Yeah, buddy!
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Sports Page on 90.3 WRST-FM Oshkosh. Sports Page airs every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. on 90.3 WRST-FM or 90.3WRST.org, or the third option, you can stream us on the Radio FX app. Just search 90.3WRST or University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. Got the usual suspects with us. We got Aiden Applegate and Jacob Link. Fellas, how are we doing today?
Doing pretty good. Jacob was saying before we went on air, Titans, Badgers, and Packers all win a game, which is really exciting.
Yeah, the Holy Trinity for some Wisconsin football.
I've never been more excited to be on the show after a Titan game than this week. I cannot wait to indulge in a conversation here on WRST about what we witnessed with the Titans taking down the Pioneers.
Yeah, Titans with that win, they have the most ranked wins of any D3 team in the nation. So somebody else who got to experience that, he's our special guest today for the first half of this show. Ben Colombe is joining us today in Studio A of WRST. He's the operations manager for Titan TV. Also does some of the play-by-play work for them. Ben, how you doing on this glorious Monday?
Doing absolutely fantastic. Thank you for having me. It's good to get back up here in the WRST studios. I haven't really been up here much since my freshman year when I was doing my shifts for class back then, but happy to be here, man.
Yeah, Ben was on the music shift for RTF 120, but good to have him back here today. But the rundown for the show is going to look like this. Again, we'll be going over this homecoming game against UW-Platteville, which, again, Titan just continuing to pack JJ Keller Field. And, I mean, that was the most attended game that I can remember throughout this season so far. So a lot of good stuff there. And then we have the Texans-Packer game. We finally have a kicker that is unbelievable. A lot of people are saying we're bowl-bound now because of the signing for Brandon McManus. But Packers, a thriller as well. The Titan football game was absolutely fun to watch. And again, Aiden mentioned it, the Badgers steamrolled Northwestern. We'll talk about that later on in the show. That'll be the last game played in Evanston as they're building a new stadium in Northwestern and I believe going to play some games in Wrigley coming up.
Yeah, that should be really exciting just to see how the Badgers do the rest of the way. They got a tough game in Penn State coming up after this week, but a solid win from the Badgers, and Northwestern looks to be on the downfall.
Yeah, and then coming up also, we'll have a lot of Titan athletics. Cross country was in action. We had tennis home against Whitewater. Swimming was in Brown Deer over the weekend. Women's soccer, they, I believe, hosted Eau Claire after the football game. And then volleyball got another sweep at Elmhurst. They continue to rock and roll. So all that is coming up and more on the sports page. We'll step aside for a quick break and be back for some Titan football and Packer discussion here on the sports page, 90.3 WRST.
If you're worried your friend may be struggling, remember, you don't have to be there to be there.
You can say how while you will get a fake tattoo. You can ask with an app if it works for you. You could chat on a game, kick off your flip-flops. You can ask on your couch while you binge watch.
Whatever gets you talking.
Reach out to a friend about their mental health. Learn how you can help at seizetheawkward.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
I just want to bang on it.
back to the sports page, ladies and gentlemen. It is good to hear that music, especially after a very good weekend for some Wisconsin football. The Packers beat the Texans 24-22. We'll have that coming up after some Titan football discussion. The WEAC Conference just continues to not disappoint this season. Titans end up winning over Platteville 24-17 in another thriller game. And fellas, I thought they played their best game of the year, their most complete game, especially on the defensive side.
Yeah, you know, once again, the defense kept UWO in this game, but it was time their offense started clicking, especially after Cole Warren went down with what looked like a broken wrist in the third quarter. There was a visible sign of relief, though, on the sideline when Brooks Blunt, the senior transfer from Eastern Michigan, came in for Warren in the third quarter, and that's really when the Titans got things going offensively. I really like Cole. He's a really talented young quarterback, but I don't think he's quite there yet. And he looked kind of shaky in the first half, threw an interception, didn't have much of a pocket presence. I think Brooks Blunt is a more experienced quarterback. He actually won the NJCAA national title through the game-winning touchdown back in, I believe, 2019. He's always an experienced quarterback, and I think the Titans will actually look better offensively with Warren probably out for the year. Blunt and Trey Tetzlaff went to the same high school, so they have already a strong connection, and I can't wait to see what the rest of the season brings for this offense.
Yeah, Blunt's a fifth year from Waukesha, and got his first reps in that Whitewater game. First pass he threw was a first down. Then they took him out. Never really saw the field after that, but then he comes in for an injured Cole Warren, and the Titans just started scoring at that point. I mean, London Little got more involved into the game, more involved than he's really been in this entire offense, and it was really refreshing to see UW Oshkosh use some of their top guys.
Absolutely. I mean, me and Justice here, we were on the call there at Titan Stadium. You heard Justice on his little sports update right before he tossed it to us in here. But we were talking, London Little needs to get more action in this offense, and that's exactly what happened in this game. We love to see it up there. And what do you have, four receptions for over 100 yards and two scores? I mean, that's just outstanding production from a guy who, like, we've talked about it all year. He can run. He's dynamic in the return game. They love to use him as that kind of weapon. And working him into that or offensive game plan is like, it's great because it takes less of that. It takes some of that pressure off of Trey Tetzlaff to have to be like the main guy in that offense. And it's not to say that he can't do it or anything, but it also makes it easier on the quarterback being able to spread the ball around the field, not having to force it into one spot consistently.
Yeah, 100%. And it's obviously been proven that Trey Tetzlaff can be that top guy. 12 receptions for 152 yards and one touchdown, the longest going for 54 yards. And he broke that reception record. And then right after that, goes down the field and gets a touchdown of his own. So, and then going back to London Little, he only had four receptions, but two of those went for touchdowns. And London Little, when he's not playing football, is running track in the winter and spring. And you could definitely tell that. I mean, he caught that one pass and split the defense, and it was from the opposite 40 he was gone, and they were not going to catch him. He finished with four receptions, 109 yards, and then the one touchdown, the longest one going for 68 yards. So it was super good to see him back in the mix. Looking at some of those rushing stats, Justice Lovelace continues to perform very well. Nobody found the end zone rushing the ball except for London Little. But, yeah, Justice Lovelace continuing to contribute to that offensive side, and he had such a good game against La Crosse and then followed it up with, I believe, another better game against Platteville.
I would say so, but at the same time, I was a little bit disappointed on his first rushing attempt to the end zone.
Yep.
And he's heading there. He's at the goal line and puts the ball out to celebrate. He thinks he's already crossed the goal line. Of course, what happens? A Pioneer comes up from behind, slaps the ball away, goes bouncing around the end zone, and the Pioneers recover it for a touchback. Now, do I think he crossed the goal line? Yes. Unfortunately, we don't have replay in Division III football, which I think is an issue that needs to be talked about more because, you know, we don't get the best crews in Division III. These D1 guys, they can see pretty much everything. They have had so much experience calling games, but these D3 officials are more like glorified high school officials. They're not going to be able to see everything. And unfortunately, that call went against the Titans, but at the same time, Lovelace should have just tucked that ball in and just barreled his way to the end zone instead of trying to put the ball out here and just dance around with it.
Yeah, would have been the first points of the game, and then the rest of the game kind of stayed at three apiece until Platteville went down the field and then scored with Zachary Botha on a rushing touchdown for their own. But turnovers really killed the Titans in this game, and, you know, it again, Jacob, you kind of mentioned this off-air before we started. They should have beat them by more, you know, and turnovers definitely hurt the Titans. But at the end of the day, you know, the scoreboard says otherwise. It goes in favor of the Titans, and they get a win on a what was a beautiful homecoming Saturday. I mean, last week against Lacrosse, you know, it was rainy and cold and just, you know, completely different weather, but very good weather for this homecoming Saturday, and the atmosphere, absolutely incredible.
I thought it was really refreshing and just, like, overall just, like, really nice to see that the Titans aren't being penalized, because they didn't get any penalties that game. And if you look at previous games, they were getting up to 60-yard penalties just because of just minor mistakes, which I thought was really nice.
Yeah, that's a great point, Aiden. And it wasn't until, I believe, the fourth quarter that we had our first penalty that was thrown in the trenches. And it was at that point where I said on air, I'm like, this has been a really clean game, because that's our first kind of flag we've seen in the trenches, whereas, you know, this Titan team has been plagued with, you know, a lot of holding penalties and stuff like that. I know they did make some changes to that offensive line. I noticed Sam Werner was in there starting at that, I believe, left tackle. Is he left or right tackle at that tackle position?
I think he's left.
Left tackle. But anyway, Sam Werner was in there his first start on the year. The offensive line, I thought, played relatively decent. I think they're improving week after week. I think, for the most part, Cole Warren did not play bad. I do think when Blunt came into the game, that was obviously a difference maker, because the Titans were able to go down the field. They were able to score. The connections with Blount and Tetzlaff and Little was just night and day. I mean, he was really utilizing those top two receivers as they should be. Trey Tetzlaff has been good all year, but again, London Little really struggled in these first few games to kind of get going. I think there was a little bit of, you know, a lack of chemistry, I think, between him and Cole Warren. But once Blount got into the game, the Titan offensive production, you know, continued from good to great.
The funny story is, so before London Little caught that 68-yard touchdown pass, one of the kickers that I helped coach, Brian, came up to me, Brian Bedola, came up to me, and he's like, "Coach Link, what would you do in this situation?" And I was like, "Honestly, Brian, I think we need to get it into our fastest guy's hands. I say throw it to London Little." What do they do the next play? They throw it to London Little, and he sprints 68 yards for the touchdown. I've never jumped higher in my life.
Jacob Link predicting the future over there on that Titan sideline. But, yeah, I feel, and you could probably answer this from a coach's perspective. Do you think that this win was sweeter than that Lacrosse win last week? Because I've never seen a team reaction like that Lacrosse win. The entire stadium, the entire sideline was just jumping up and down. That just seemed very crazy. And then this Platteville win, you come in, it's like, that might have topped that, you know, because Platteville undefeated coming into this season. They were the highest ranked WIAC team in D3 in the nation at that point. And then, you know, we come in and beat them pretty well. I mean, it wasn't like we were getting blown out like the Lacrosse game and then had a lot of ground to make up. It was a close game from, you know, whistle to whistle.
Yeah, I think the game against Lacrosse was just so nerve-wracking at the end. We all kind of expected to lose. I mean, you get into that situation with a 41-yard field goal, having an All-American kicker potentially go out there for the win, you pretty much expect 75% of the time he's going to make that kick on his home turf. So we were all kind of standing there going, uh-oh, Lacrosse did it to us again. Third straight year, they're going to win the game with a field goal. But then this game, it was like after halftime, we knew we were going to win. Everybody at halftime was so calm and collected. Nobody was like yelling at each other that we were down. Everybody just kind of sat there and was like, we know that we're going to come back in the second half. There's no reason to be concerned or yell or be mad at anything. And those guys just went out there, and they knew they were going to win. That was the big thing, is that we just knew we were going to win. There is so much confidence on this team after beating Lacrosse, that I think this team knows they can beat anybody in the WIAC.
I think that mentality right there that you were just talking about, Jacob, it really showed through in the way that they were playing in this game. Because, Dylan, you mentioned it was a clean game throughout the entire game. But more than that, it was a very patient game, I thought, from the way that they managed the whole, really the entire afternoon. They showed a very, like, a lot amount of trust in their defense throughout this entire game, really. And they really stepped up when they needed to. I mean, on the ground, they gave up probably more rushing yards to Zachary Buffen than they should have. But quarterback Michael Premi for Platteville, I don't think he had a spectacular afternoon. I mean, I think, honestly, had Cole Warren played a complete game, I think he would have outplayed him. In the little action that Brooks Blount got, I think he did outplay him. And I think it just kind of speaks to the balance that this team has right now, because, like you said, it was their most complete game they've played all year. And I think that that's in large part due to, like, what Jacob was talking about, that ability to just remain calm and put trust in the hands of your guys, you know?
Yeah, and WRST, I mean, we were there for the homecoming festivities at the beginning of the game. Me and Aiden and Dominic Lee were throwing out free footballs to people walking by, so that was a lot of fun. But even just chatting with coaches that were walking by, they told us they're in a position where it's like they, after this lacrosse game, they have that confidence of that they can beat anybody, especially at home, and especially with the way they've played at home. And they go out there and prove that again. It's a little bit interesting, though. You know, you look at the rankings coming into D3. We're still below Platteville. I know that there's some, yeah, Jacob Link shaking his head over there. How do we feel about that? Because you got Platteville ranked at 8th right now. UW-Oshkosh, we are 9th. And River Falls is still in the top 10. How do we feel going into that? It's like, you know, we beat Platteville pretty well, up by a possession. It wasn't like it was a close, you know, it was a close game, obviously. But it wasn't like lacrosse where we were down in that first half. It was a tale of two halves, and then we kind of just picked it up in the second half of ball. How do we feel about that still being, like, ranked below Platteville? To me, it does not make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. If you beat a team, usually you jump them in the poll. Like, I get we have two losses, one of those to Michigan Tech, but that's a Division II team. Sure, we got blown up by a Division II team, but how about all these teams like River Falls that plays Lakeland and puts up like 70 points on them? That shouldn't count for more of a better win than our loss to Michigan Tech. And I know that game looked close against Platteville, but honestly, going into that fourth quarter, it didn't feel close at all. I will say the game got a little too close when we started playing more prevent defense, tried to keep everything in front of us, and then suddenly the offense was like, let's just try to run down the clock and just kill some time here. I didn't like that decision at all, but really, it wasn't that close of a game. It just kind of looked like it because of the score.
Yeah, and I think that I believe Ben mentioned this as well, that or Ben and Jacob both mentioned this, that through the air, we did outplay them. I mean, even with Cole Warren in the game, going into half, I believe, what quarter did Warren get injured?
Third quarter.
It was the third quarter.
Early third quarter.
So, going, I mean, he's still in the game going into halftime, but I remember looking at those stats, and we had more passing yards, we had a better completion percentage going into that half. So through the air, we were looking pretty good, and even at a time where Platteville, that's kind of all they were doing. They didn't really start running the ball until their, you know, second and third drives of the game. That entire first drive was all passes from Priami to Garrett Stair, Brant Stair, Ryan Doherty, their top receivers that they want to go to. But the Titans were still able to outplay them through that first half of ball, and then even throwing Blount in the game in the second half, they were still able to keep that air raid. I think where we struggled was running the ball. But I think Platteville's defense has been very solid in preventing that and stopping that. Zachary Bothan statistically did have a better game than Justice Lovelace, but still a very good complete win by the Titans over the Pioneers, 24-17. Some other scores around the WEAC: UW Stout and River Falls, 37-40 in overtime. River Falls ends up hanging on to that one. Stout blew, a 21-point lead?
Yeah, they blew a 21-point lead in the third quarter. By halftime, of course, they're up by 21, and then suddenly everything just changed. I get that River Falls was at home, and they probably had more confidence, but that game was so sloppy looking back at the stats. I mean, guys are throwing picks, putting balls on the floor. I think there were 7 combined turnovers in that game, which is just insane. But that just goes to show you, any team in this conference can beat any team. We saw Stout somehow take down Whitewater, and then they nearly took down River Falls. But the crazy part is, Stout lost to Carroll to begin the year. That makes no sense. So I think any one of these teams is very beatable. What's most nerve-wracking for me as a Titan fan is having to finish the season at River Falls, because that's always a difficult place to play. I think, did the home teams win pretty much every game once again this week?
The only home team that did not win was Eau Claire, and Eau Claire fell 7-34 against La Crosse, who was in desperate need to get back into the win column.
Yeah, so once again, it seems like pretty much the top 5 teams, they win at home consistently, and that's going to be a tough game for the Titans to travel all the way out there to River Falls and win a game that could potentially be for the conference championship.
Jacob mentioned a good point, saying that most of the games, the WIAC conference or not, the home team usually wins. And Jacob, why do you think that is, that like mainly it's the home team that ends up winning the game?
I think it's just because of how each fan base approaches the games. Because, of course, down in what, like, they're just so much different. In Whitewater, you have people, 20,000 plus people packed that stands in pregame, like, 4 hours before the game starts, they're still out there setting up tables. When I rode down there with the team, by the time we got there to the stadium, everybody was already out there with drinks in hand, like waving at us, like flipping us off as we're going through and stuff. But then you go to Platteville. Platteville is a terrible place to play because they really don't have much of a visiting locker room. Most guys had to change outside, and then you have to walk like half a mile to the stadium from campus, whereas Platteville, like when they're at home, they just get to go in this nice, giant, big locker room. And then, of course, La Crosse, that place is always difficult to play too because their fans come out in strong numbers there. And then River Falls, you don't know what you're going to get over there because it could be snowy. It's always really cold out there. Usually the wind is really bad. And then, of course, the wind, again, at Titan Stadium, that's everybody knows Titan Stadium for the wind. Titan Stadium has probably the worst wind in all of Wisconsin. I mean, you go out there and All-American kickers struggle just to make an extra point because those balls are blowing around. Because the way the stands are set up, the goalposts are actually beyond where the stands are. So when the wind comes, it goes around the stands. And there's times when you stand there at midfield and you see the flags blowing one way, and then you look the other way and the other goalpost flags are blowing the opposite direction. So there's like a swirling wind that goes around there. So it's just all the different elements that make playing on the road in the WIAC just so tough.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jacob.
I was just going to say, it's kind of like the Big Ten. Because it's tough to play at Northwestern because of their wind. Camp Randall is known for its awesome atmosphere. The Horseshoe has a completely different atmosphere than Camp Randall, and it's very difficult to play there. So I think just in general, playing on the road in college football is a very difficult thing to do.
Yeah, and Titan Stadium being one of the more open stadiums that I've called at. I mean, Platteville, that entire campus is obviously very hilly. You know, Whitewater's kind of the same way. But yeah, I would imagine Titan Stadium definitely one of the more, it's one of the more flat stadiums or you know, flat campuses that WIAC schools have. But the schools, the home team's coming up for next week, this Saturday, October 26th. Stout will host Eau Claire. Again, they're coming off a tough loss against River Falls, and Stout's really starting to figure it out and put up a lot of points. So Stout and Eau Claire, I would imagine they probably get back in the win column there. Again, it's tough to play on the road, but I do believe that Oshkosh, I don't think, is going to have a problem against Stevens Point coming up this week, because Point just lost 66-0 on the road against Whitewater. And, Jacob, you said that they haven't even updated their stats on their athletic website.
They still have stats for 2023. There's no 2024 stats so far. So the only win
at this point
that Stevens Point has was against St. Norbert. They beat 24-3 September 14th. But let's be honest, St. Norbert isn't much of a football school. But I do want to say, did you look at that scoring report against Whitewater? It was insane. So Whitewater returned the opening kickoff. Then two plays later, they picked off the Point quarterback and scored one play later. So within like 45 seconds, it was already 14-0. And then Point had to punt 3-and-out, and Whitewater went down and scored. So within 5 minutes, Point was already down 21-0 in the first quarter. That's insane.
Yeah, and Stevens Point, it just continues to be a struggle fest there. So Oshkosh, again, they can't take their whole team on the road, but I would imagine, I wouldn't be surprised if the starters, you know, are kind of out, you know, by the fourth quarter. Obviously, they're going to keep them in as long as they can and see how much points they can rack up, because this will be definitely a big stat game for a lot of guys on this Oshkosh program. Then River Falls will be at La Crosse. And then Whitewater at Platteville. So those are some interesting matchups there. Again, the WIAC has been anybody can beat anybody this year. And I believe the Whitewater-Platteville game is very, very compelling because, again, Platteville, a very tough place to play. But Whitewater is always around. They're always relevant. Looking at those D3 rankings again, Platteville is still highest at 8th. Again, I know we got mixed feelings about that, but the Titans are around 9th. River Falls is 10th. And then it looks like Whitewater and La Crosse are still in the rankings currently. Whitewater's 19th and La Crosse 22nd. I feel like that's the lowest I've seen. Definitely the lowest of the year for La Crosse. But I feel like that's the lowest I've seen Whitewater consistently ranked, as they've been kind of just hovering around that 20 mark.
Probably within like the last 5 years. That's the lowest we've seen Whitewater ranked. And what gives me the most hope as a Titan fan is the fact that we opened up our schedule with easily the toughest schedule in all of Division III college football. And we ran the gauntlet and come out with only 2 losses. And the way this schedule is going to run out for everybody else could end up with 2 losses. And if we take down Stout, we could have already clinched the conference title by that point. So that just is insane that last year we struggled to go 6-4. This year we have a tougher schedule. We take down Wheaton by a touchdown. We take down Linfield in overtime. Lose to Michigan Tech, but then we only lose to Whitewater by a touchdown, take down La Crosse, and then take down Platteville. Every single game has been close, and somehow this team has been able to come through and pull out those close victories.
Yeah, let's keep it on Titan Athletics here for a little bit. We got about 5 minutes until we hit the half hour. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like the Titans' toughest start to the schedule coming into this season. They've got the most ranked wins now. This win over Platteville puts them the most ranked wins for any D3 team in the nation. So that's an impressive stat. Again, just had a receiver who broke the all-time school record for receptions. Is probably on his way to breaking more records this season. And then everybody else's schedule, like our schedule starts off hard and then gets a little bit softer as the season goes on. It's kind of the opposite for everybody. Ben, I know you've been covering a lot on Titan TV. How do you kind of project this this schedule to go here for the Titans? Because they got Point coming up on the road. Then they go to Eau Claire, who, you know, is obviously a better football team than Point, but still kind of lower tier within the conference. Then they got to host Stout and then travel to River Falls. So they kind of have two, you'd kind of say, cookie-cutter games on paper. And then Stout, again, they're starting to figure things out, and River Falls has been good all year. So it should be an interesting schedule for them going forward.
No doubt. And, I mean, you know, you hate to write off any teams in college football, but I have a hard time seeing Stevens Point compete with this team coming up next weekend. I might end up going back to my homeland there to maybe watch that game over at Gerke Field in Stevens Point, maybe see if we can get a Trey Tetzlaff all-time receiving touchdowns record in school history against that. He needs two more, I believe, to break the record, one more to tie it. And, I mean, like you were saying, we might not expect to see the starters play that entire game, so who knows? Maybe he can break it in three quarters. But then Eau Claire, I think that's another win right there because, like you said, they're better than Point, no doubt, but they still lost, 71-14 against River Falls, I believe.
Yep.
So I don't see a huge threat there. It's really going to come down to those last two games. And the home game against Stout, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be dicey because, like you said, they're kind of finding their groove a little bit. But I think Oshkosh has found their groove more than any team in WEAC right now. I think that they are rolling. I think if they play Whitewater again, I think they have a chance of beating them, especially if they were to play them here. But they play lacrosse again, I think they beat them by more because they really found their groove in that second half. And kind of like what Justice talked about in his sports update before we went on air, they've been kind of a second-half team these last couple weeks. And I think that ability to close out games is going to come in real clutch these last two games of the season, especially against River Falls on the road, because that might be one that decides the entire conference right there.
Yeah, those are great points. And I do believe that it comes down to November 16th against River Falls. And again, River Falls, a very tough, you know, environment to play in. You never know what you're going to get there. It's dang near in Minnesota at that point. But
Actually, the team stays in Minnesota and travels over to River Falls. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so, there you go. But, I think that Titans have a very favorable schedule, and I think they have an advantage in that sense, whereas, you know, their schedule has gotten a bit easier, whereas I think everybody else's is getting tougher. But, Ben, that was a great point that you made up, that Oshkosh, I think, has found their groove more than any team right now. And, again, I think that's why they've been able to put together the games that they have been. I mean, I feel like that game against lacrosse, that second half, was like a reawakening of this team. I mean, they were very good in those non-conference games. Michigan Tech, obviously, we know what happened there. That was a big step back. But then they go into Whitewater, Perkins Stadium, which, you know, again, we keep talking about how tough it is to play on the road. Perkins Stadium, I would argue, is probably the toughest place to play within the WIAC Conference. Jacob Link mentions it all the time, their stupid loud cannon that they have go off. Definitely makes it tough to play there for sure. But they go in there and make it very close. I mean, the defense, again, kept them in that game. We didn't come out of that game really thinking much about the offense. There still wasn't much offensive production. We only put up 14 points, but the defense was able to hold Whitewater to 21. And that was only a one-possession game, one of the closest games between those two teams that we've had. You know, and then lacrosse comes to J.J. Keller Field. First half is nothing to write home about at all, but they figure things out. And then they come into this Platteville game and put together one of the most complete games they've had this season.
Do you guys think that if the Titans played, when they played Whitewater, if they didn't have Cole Warren as the quarterback and they had Blunt instead, do you think there would have been a closer game or a potential win?
It's definitely something to think about. I know Jacob could probably answer this a bit better than me, but from what I saw, Blount was out there, one play, and he threw a first down right away. Same thing when he came into this Platteville game. The first two plays were first downs, and the Titans just kept the chains moving.
Yeah, Blount had a complete dot on that third down play. It was probably the best throw of the game out of either quarterback. But I will say that the penalties just killed Oshkosh against Whitewater. They had 65 yards of penalties against Whitewater, and it seemed like the referees were just kind of throwing their flags in favor of Whitewater all the time. That's why it's such a difficult place to play, because I think when you live around there, because most referees in Division III live around where they're calling their games, they're going to be a lot closer to those coaches and stuff. And I honestly think they were kind of favoring Whitewater a little bit, but then also we made too many mistakes. There was a fumble in the red zone and a couple of missed opportunities and some shanked punts. It was a lot larger than just the quarterback play. So I guess I'm not sure. A story short, I'm not exactly sure if we still would have beaten them, but I do know that Blunt looks like a better quarterback than Warren.
And Warren, with that wrist injury that he had in the Platteville game, likely could be out for the season, and Blount will probably be the go-to guy, which is good for the Titans going forward. You have that fifth year, you have that guy with a lot of experience to kind of take the Titans through the rest of the season. So we're going to wrap the Titan Athletics segment up, the Titan Football segment up, and when we come back, Titans will be at Stevens Point on Saturday, October 26th, this Saturday, 1 p.m., And then, to recap the rest of their schedule, they're on the road against Eau Claire November 2nd. November 9th is their last home game at J.J. Keller Field on the regular season. They will host UW Stout, and then they close things out again. What could be, like Ben said, the deciding game for them going into a potential postseason push against River Falls.
So, one last thing, Dylan, before we go. Yes. Just got a couple of other pointers for you. So speaking of pointers for the pointers, their starting quarterback, Jake Lear, is actually out for the season.
Oh, really?
With an injury. So, in their game against Whitewater, they played three quarterbacks, and they combined for just 47 yards passing and three interceptions.
Wow.
They only totaled 77 rushing yards. And the defense was so bad that Whitewater scored on every single possession of the game. So, honestly, I'm predicting a 65-3 Oshkosh victory.
You heard it here first from Jacob Link. It's good to have that insider here on the sports page. When we come back, we'll discuss this Packers win over the Houston Texans. They win 24-22. We have a kicker in Green Bay. His name is Brandon McManus. That's all coming up on the sports page here on 90.3 WRST-FM.
If I could be you,
and you could be me, for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
This is your captain. We are going to be experiencing some slight turbulence. Please fasten your... Oh. Hold on, just got a video of my cat.
Imagine the pilot of an airplane was as confident as you are texting and driving. Seems kind of crazy when you put it like that.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Right now, our country feels divided, but there's a place where people are coming together.
I was nervous to talk to someone so different than me.
Me too.
Love Has No Labels and One Small Step are helping people with different political views, beliefs, and experiences connect through conversation, and it feels good.
This conversation gives me hope.
It gives me a lot of hope, too.
Take a step toward bringing our country and your community together. Start a conversation at lovehasnolabels.com/onesmallstep. A message from StoryCorps, Love Has No Labels, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The sports page airs every Monday, 5 to 6 on 90.3 WRST-FM. We will jump into the Green Bay Packers as they get a thriller win over the Houston Texans. Fellas, we're just going to jump right into it. I already mentioned this before, but Brandon McManus, he's the hero at Lambeau Field. We just signed him. He's a Super Bowl winning kicker, spent 9 years with the Denver Broncos, was drafted in 2014 by them, played a season in Jacksonville, and then... You know, we've been having our obvious special teams and kicker problems coming into this game. And then we sign him this past week. And then he goes out there and kicks the game-winning field goal against a tough Houston Texans team who, again, will be a top AFC team come November and December ball once we get closer into the NFL postseason. But initial thoughts, reactions from anybody from this game? I know it was a thriller and It was the first whiteout that I'd ever seen. The whiteout uniforms look pretty cool. I'm always a sucker for the normal, you know, green and gold, but I have to admit those Color Rush whiteout uniforms are really cool. So any initial thoughts from this Sunday's game?
I've been telling you guys for weeks, and for weeks you guys have been hearing it, that we needed to get rid of Braden Narvinson. I've said it probably every single episode of the show. You can't go missing 5 kicks the most in the NFL this season and expect to still be on the team. And finally, the Packers make the switch. They bring in the 33-year-old McManus, who made a kick that Narvinson has been unable to make all year with even a bad snap. If you watch the snap, it was a bit low and outside. It was a great hold, actually, by the punter. But they finally made the switch, and it was the right call. He made the kick. That's all that matters. And hopefully, we don't need to worry about kicking until next year.
Well, I mean, obviously, like you said, the big storyline is going to be the kicker and Brandon McManus replacing Braden Narvinson. Because, I mean, like, looking back at those games, you could see in Braden Narvinson's eyes, every time he missed a kick, he was like, I know I'm out of here as soon as they can find anybody else. And luckily, we found somebody else. But apart from that, another special teams guy that I need to shout out, because he kept us in large part in this game, Daniel Whelan, the punter, he showed out in, like, a big way against this team on Sunday. Because, like you said, great hold there on the final field goal. And just in the punting game, he was doing a great job of pinning the Texans back deep. I mean, Daniel Whelan's one of the greatest punters in the NFL at this point, and no one's going to change my mind on that. He pins him inside the 20, like, every single time, practically. But all around, it just felt like a great team win for the Packers. I think, like, the defense, especially, it really showed up in a big way. This unit that Jeff Hafley has put together is just outstanding so far. Guy I really want to highlight, Evan Williams, the rookie safety, number 33, flying all over the field, making great tackles. I mean, they highlighted him a couple times on the broadcast on CBS, where he's just staying home when he needs to. He's reading the field exactly the way he needs to. And I think he's going to be a very valuable piece for this defense, especially just going forward compared to the secondary we've had in the last few years. I mean, it's night and day.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Another guy I would shout out on the defense is Eric Wilson. He had 2 sacks and 4 tackles for a loss. I think if there was a guy who was flying around a little bit more than Evan Williams, it was Eric Wilson. I mean, he was blowing up plays left and right, again, against a very good Texans team that, you know, we knew this was going to be a dogfight coming into this game. Jaden Reed mentioned that in an interview. He said it's going to be a dogfight from whistle to whistle. Obviously, we saw the pregame scuffle between Stephon Diggs and Jair Alexander. We knew that was going to be a big story coming in. Back when Stephon Diggs was playing with the Bills, he was following Jair coming out of the locker room as the Packers were running out. And then similar things occurred here pregame, you know, going into that. So we knew that would be a big story. A lot of tension between these two teams. Jair was talking trash every single play, it looked like. But no, the defense showed out. And Jordan Love even said, this was a quote per ESPN, it wasn't perfect, but we found a way to get it done. And at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
And speaking of Love, I don't know about you guys, but I was real disappointed in the amount of interceptions he threw.
Yep.
And how the Texans were able to get 16 points on turnovers alone. I mean, it's good that, like, we, like, that didn't, like, hurt us entirely, but, like, mistakes like that can, like, destroy us against, like, Penn State, for an example.
Yeah.
And I think part of what you mentioned right there, like, it kind of factors back into that defense, and the ability that they showed there is, like, we don't have to force our offense to make all these big plays, and we can afford a few mistakes here and there because the defense, they kept us in this game, and it allowed us to kind of feel like the world isn't ending every time Jordan Love throws an interception, because let's face it, he's kind of a Brett Favre type of player. He just likes to let it rip, and whatever happens, happens. It doesn't really scare me too much, though, because he has a lot of that Aaron Rodgers blood in him, too, where he can be efficient. It just kind of seems like every time he throws the ball, it's like the flip of a coin. But I think the big thing to highlight is just when you have a defense that's playing at the level that our defense has been playing, Jordan Love can afford to kind of play his style of ball. I mean, he said in a post-game interview, he's not going to change how he's playing. That's just his style of play. And, I mean, if you were to take a game like this and hang your head, that could kind of upset your momentum. It could upset your confidence. I think the Packers are going to be just fine, and I think Jordan Love's going to be just fine.
I would agree. Yeah, I was not. I've never been in a panic mode at this point in the season. I mean, even after that Minnesota loss, which again, that first half was just brutal to watch, absolutely atrocious. But they turned things around, and I mean, despite turning the ball over however many times they did in that game, we were still able to come back and almost win. And think about it, if we had Brandon McManus at that point, we probably would have won that game. But yeah, Jordan Love, 220 yards through the air. You take away those interceptions, he's got a pretty decent game. He threw three touchdowns, but yeah, the two interceptions, like you mentioned, Aiden, definitely kind of take away the value of that. But Love said it himself in the postgame interview. He goes, it wasn't perfect. We still found a way to get it done. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, you know, I thought the Packers offense, of course, played an awful first quarter, but I was impressed by the way they turned things around in the passing game later on. And they finally got Josh Jacobs involved with 76 rushing yards. And like you said, Dylan, despite those two picks, he still finished with over 200 yards passing and three touchdowns. And I thought he did a really good job of spreading the ball around and leading the team on that game-winning drive at the end. That's what you love to see. That's what Aaron Rodgers in his prime used to always do. I'm still a bit concerned, though, with Love's decision-making, because sometimes you'll see him look downfield and throw into, like, quadruple coverage, which you're like, where is that ball going to go? You can't fit the ball in there. But I know he's more of a Brett Favre-style quarterback that looks to air it out and just throw it as fast as he can to zip it past people. But I think he just needs to get better reads on the defense. And that's just going to come with more experience. The more reads he can get on defenses and maybe some more film work, that he'll be better off. But the way things are right now, I'm going to be a bit concerned in the playoffs, because if he throws three picks or something, or even two picks in the playoffs, we're going to be sitting here talking about how the Packers blew it to the 49ers or the Eagles again, just like last year.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll be the 49ers at this point, because, I mean, they have been very injury-prone throughout this season. But the NFC North, we have to talk about that. This division is just the best it has been in years. But real quick before we get to that, Jacob, you mentioned a good point that they were able to get the passing game involved. Dontavian Wicks had a touchdown. Tucker Kraft found the end zone early on. And then Josh Jacobs got more involved in the run game. And that's another thing we'd love to see. You bring in Josh Jacobs as basically the replacement for Aaron Jones, and the first few weeks it was kind of disappointing, his production. But Jacobs obviously has turned things around. He's obviously a great talent. He's great to have on this roster. I was so excited when we got him, and he's continued to be a big part of this team. Through the pass game, he had 5 receptions for 16 yards, and his lone touchdown was through the air as well. So Packers doing a good job. Love, I think, like you said, Ben, and Jacob, you mentioned this as well, and then Aiden, you also brought this up first. He loves to take risks, you know, and that's good, you know, but at the same point, there were a lot of dangerous throws that, you know, could have gone the other way, and the Texans, you know, if they were able to make the interception or a play on the ball with an offense with C.J. Stroud, Tank Dell, Joe Mixon running the ball, Stephon Diggs, obviously, their number one receiver, that's an offense that could definitely capitalize off mistakes like those. So real quick, looking at scores around the league, Jacksonville beat New England 32-16 in a big game for the Jags in London. Seattle beat Atlanta on the road 34-14. Buffalo got a win over Tennessee 34-10. It is still an absolute crapshoot in Cleveland right now. Deshaun Watson is out for the year now with a ruptured Achilles as they lose to Cincinnati at home 21-14. Miami at Indianapolis, the Colts are able to get a win at home against the Miami Dolphins. And then again, the NFC North, Detroit and Minnesota, that was an outstanding game. Detroit wins 31-29. They get the game-winning field goal, if I remember that correctly, and then I think Minnesota ended up just running out of time at the end of that game. So Detroit wins 31-29. Philadelphia steamrolls New York 28-3. Saquon's return to the Giants Stadium, and he got a lot of boos, obviously, but, you know, that just added fuel to the fire for him. Vegas loses on the road to Los Angeles, and then Washington is just coming out of nowhere with Jaden Daniels in that offense. They win 40-7 over Carolina. Kansas City, hate to say it, they're still undefeated. I am a Kansas City hater, I know. I do like the players on that team. It's ironic, but it's the Patriots effect for me, I feel like. I'm just sick of them winning all the time. But they're undefeated, and they beat San Francisco 28-18 on the road. And then Pittsburgh just decided to let Russ cook. 37-15, they beat the New York Jets on Sunday Night Football. Any reactions from you guys from any of these games around the league?
Oh, the vibes are bad in New York right now.
Yes, man. Yes, they are.
I mean, Devontae Adams got to lose to the Steelers 2 weeks in a row now.
That's a tough
way for the cookie to crumble right there. But this Jets offense is just completely lost right now. I know they're not going to be the focus of this show, but, I mean, Aaron Rodgers, he looks cooked. He's done. Yeah. I mean, he doesn't look like even remotely the same quarterback that he was for the Packers. He's looking like a worse version of the 2022 Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's him, it's Lazard, it's Devontae Adams. He's just trying to bring in his guys like it's 2018 or something. And unfortunately for him, it's 2024, and Aaron Rodgers is old. And, you know, he's still my GOAT, but I think it is officially time for me to declare that Aaron Rodgers is done.
Yeah, it's a good declaration. And Devontae Adams, it's even funnier. He goes from a 2-5 Raiders team to now a 2-5 Jets team. But, you know, he's with the homies, Aaron Rodgers, so I guess that makes it a little bit better.
I couldn't believe, so I checked my phone, and it was halftime, and it was only like something like 14-7 or 10-7 at halftime. I was like, oh, wow, this game's actually pretty close. And then I went to bed because I was irritated with the stupid Dodgers beating the Mets. I was not happy about that. And then I wake up this morning and I'm like, holy cow, what the heck happened in that second half? And I look and they just completely fell apart. I mean, Rodgers had, what, 2 or 3 interceptions? And so, yeah, I don't think the Jets are really going to end this season any better than they have the previous 4 or 5 or 6, even 10 years now at this point. They haven't even made the playoffs since the butt fumble, I believe. But
good old Mark Sanchez.
Yes, Mark Sanchez, shout out to you. But I do think that I'm a bit concerned about when the Lions play the Packers, because this run game has been something that the Packers have struggled with all year, and it's something they're going to have to clean up when they face the Lions at home, because with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, they're just going to run all over us. I mean, the Packers allowed Joe Mixon with 115 yards and 2 touchdowns. And if you get both Gibbs and Montgomery out there at the same time, I feel like we're not going to be able to respond as much as we probably should be able to.
Yeah, Packers will face the Lions at home, 3:30 game, November 3rd, to kick off their November schedule. They got the Jaguars coming up. They're on the road there. I personally don't have any worries about that game. I don't think anybody else does. Everybody's kind of shaking their heads in agreement. And then, yeah, we host the Lions at Lambeau Field. That game, I can't imagine the atmosphere that's going to be for that game. And then we're at Chicago. And again, it's interesting because the Bears, they came off the bye week this week. So now they go into next week pretty fresh, pretty rested up. But again, just with how the NFC North has been, I can't say for certain that us at Soldier Field is a must win for sure. But I can't sit here in previous years and say that we're kind of just going to go in there and kill them.
Yeah, the biased Packer fan in me wants to say that the Bears are pretenders because they've played ugly teams these first few weeks of the season. But I got to give credit where credit is due. Caleb Williams has been balling out these last couple weeks, as much as I hate to see it. But all in all, on paper, I think the Packers are the better team, and I think that they will get a win in Chicago. But the preceding week against Detroit, it's going to be probably our toughest game of the season. And, you know, it'll only be tougher when we have to play in Detroit a few weeks later. But I think ultimately the Packers can lock in and win both of these games. I think they can run the gauntlet in the NFC North for the rest of the year. I mean, it is a bloodbath, as you've said, Dylan, but ultimately I do think that the Packers have the highest ceiling of any team in the NFC North.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. They got the Lions, they got the Bears, then they host the 49ers and the Dolphins. Then they are at Detroit again, and we don't see the Vikings and the Bears till the last 2 weeks of the season. So I would love to see that. I would love to see them run the gauntlet of the NFC North. But, I mean, yeah, this division just continues to not disappoint.
When the Packers beat the Bears and we are still on the sports page, are we going to play the song "The Bears Still Suck"?
We should. I feel
because
like
that is my favorite song to just take out. Whenever the Packers beat the Bears, that's the first thing I'm playing. Yeah. I get my speaker out and I start going around my living room playing "The Bears Still Suck" because it's honestly, it's the sweetest thing as a Packers fan when you go down there, completely destroy them and make their fans go home and cry because, you know, the previous couple weeks they're like, oh, this is the Bears year. This is the Bears year. And then you go out there and you destroy them and then suddenly Bears fans are quiet for the rest of the season.
85, here we come. We're rebuilding the glory days. But yeah, I feel like we got to play "The Bears Still Suck" and then follow that up with bang on the drum. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah, that'll be the playlist coming in. So that will conclude our Packer football talk. We'll spend we'll take a quick break. We'll spend the last 10 minutes going over the rest of Titan Athletics. And then also we do want to preview the World Series that has been set with the Yankees and Dodgers. Ben Colomb, thank you for joining us. It was a pleasure to have you on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I'll be happy to rejoin you in a few weeks here if I'm welcome to come back up here.
You are definitely welcome to come back up here, you and a bunch more as well. So, yeah, Ben Colomb, our guest, he's operations manager for Titan TV. You'll probably be seeing him on a couple more episodes of the sports page. But with that, we will take a quick break and be back for some more Titan Athletic talk. We had a load of Titan Athletic schedule for this past weekend, and then we'll also talk about the World Series coming up on October 25th. I believe that'll be this Thursday between the Dodgers and the Yankees. So don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Sports Page on 90.3 WRST-FM Oshkosh.
Hey, you. Have you downloaded the Radio FX app? Listen to 90.3 WRST anytime and anywhere, and interact with our student-ran station. Participate in surveys, chats, and polls, all with our student DJs, only on the Radio FX app. That's the Radio FX app for 90.3 WRST FM Oshkosh. Interested in volunteering? Ascension Mercy Hospital is looking for volunteers. Work with craft projects, fundraising, mass, the gift shop, maintenance, transportation, and volunteer with different units like outpatient and inpatient rehab. Interested? Volunteer to make a difference in the lives of patients. Head on over to www.ascension.org/Ascension Mercy Volunteer. Brought to you by 90.3 WRST FM Oshkosh.
Dreaming of a career in content creation? UWO's Radio TV Film Program educates tomorrow's media professionals. Your journey starts here. Schedule a visit or apply today.
Back to the Sports Page. Ladies and gentlemen, the Sports Page airs every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. on 90.3 WRST-FM Oshkosh. Ben Colomb joined us for this, was supposed to be the first half of the show, but we got like 10 minutes left, so the conversation went very well. We talked some Titan football. We talked some Packers. Spent a lot of time on both those games as it was a good weekend. And then we also did mention the Badgers steamrolling Northwestern. And the last game that'll be played at Evanston as they will get a new stadium coming up. The rest of those Northwestern games, home games, will be played at Wrigley Field, which that hasn't happened, I believe, since the Bears in the 1950s, Jacob.
That's what I would think. Some of those classic stories of Bronco Nagurski running into the wall out there in center field because he didn't know where the end zone stopped. Just some of those classic games that, you know, between the Bears and the Packers, I'm pretty sure Vince Lombardi actually coached there against the Bears once or twice. And, yeah, just it's a classic place to play college football and football in general, and it's great to see once again.
We will quickly jump into the rest of Titan Athletics. We had cross-country, tennis hosted Whitewater. It was an unfortunate showing for the tennis team. They got swept 9-0 against the Warhawks in what has been a pretty good season for them with WIAC opponents, but they fall pretty big to the Warhawks. But we had cross-country. The men's team was at Augustana, I believe, and then the women's team was out in Connecticut. And then we also had swimming that took place at Brown Deer. Jacob, you did some reports on both cross-country and swimming team. What do you got? What happened this weekend?
So the UW Oshkosh women's cross country team placed 12th at the Connecticut College Invitational at Harkness Memorial State Park in October 19th in Waterford, Connecticut, while the men's team placed 20th at the Augustana College Interregional Invitational at the Zaki Golf Course in Rock Island, Illinois, on the same day. The women's squad finished with 308 points in the 47-team field, and Oshkosh was led by senior Amelia Lehman, who placed 30th with a new personal record time of 21 minutes, 56 seconds. Audrey McLean from Middlebury College won the women's 6,000-meter race with a time of 20 minutes, 44 seconds, while the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, known for their smarts, won the team with 83 points. On the men's side, the Titans finished the day with 547 points in the 40-team field at Augustana, and Oshkosh was led by junior Cameron Cullen, who claimed a 25th-place finish with a personal record time of 24 minutes, 51 seconds. Whitewater's Christian Patska, last year's national runner-up, won that meet in Augustana with a time of 23 minutes, 52 seconds, while Wartburg College won the team event with 41 points. The Titans will head to Whitewater to compete at the UW-Whitewater Warhawk Open October 25th with the women's race at noon and the men's race at 12:45. Now looking at the swimming and diving teams, they claimed 11 top 8 finishes at the non-scoring Wisconsin Showcase Invite October 19th, hosted by UW-Milwaukee at the Schroeder Aquatic Center in Brown Deer. The highest place finisher of the day was UW freshman Rowan Sinclair, who placed 5th in the women's 200-yard butterfly with a time of 2 minutes and 17 seconds. The Titans will travel to Waukesha to take on Carroll University in a dual meet October 26th at the Van Mail Fieldhouse at 11 a.m.
And then we'll quickly jump over to Titans soccer. They competed, Saturday after the football game as well, I believe, versus Eau Claire. Aiden Applegate did some reporting on that. Aiden, what do you got for us this weekend for soccer?
So last Saturday, the Titans took on Eau Claire and lost a game to 1-0. Their conference record right now is 1-3. Titans were able to get at least two shots on goal by number 20, Greta Steins, and number 24, Jaden Leroy. Eau Claire was able to get 7 shots on goal. Now, Eau Claire is usually a better team than they have been in the entire soccer conference, but the Titans didn't get blown out, which I was really surprised about. And Emma Shaloin got a new record for 6 saves for the Titans. The Titans' next game will be at Stevens Point. This Wednesday at 7:30 p.m.
And final score of that game was only 1-0. Is that correct, against Eau Claire?
Yeah, it should have been. If you look at the stats, the shots in general, Eau Claire had 17 shots and Oshkosh only had 5.
Holy crap!
So it should have been a blowout. But I mean, what me and Jacob saw with the Whitewater game, the Titans, they seem like they've just like resetted everything. So, I mean, hopefully they can get at least a few more conference wins.
Right, yeah. I guess there's a silver lining in every story. I mean, 17 shots on goal, only one of them goes through. That's some good stuff from the defense. Still, unfortunately, a loss on the record. But Titans soccer seeming to find their footing a bit, at least be more competitive, which is definitely a good thing to see. But a team that has definitely found their footing and just, I mean, keeps dominating everybody, it seems like, is a Titan volleyball team. They go out to Elmhurst this last Saturday, and they sweep Elmhurst 3-0. Titans registered 47 kills to Elmhurst 22, and they had 117 attempts over Elmhurst's 88 attempts. So they beat the Elmhurst Blue Jays, again, 3-0. Very good performances from, again, that entire roster. And, I mean, what's to say about the volleyball team that really hasn't been said? They just keep dominating and finding ways to win.
I was actually disappointed by Sammy Pearlberg. She probably had the worst game of the year, had 8 kills but only 7 errors, and that meant that she hit 0.038 on the day, which is easily the lowest kill percentage that she's had this season, if not her entire career. But it was nice to see both Hannah Moe and Riley Kent kind of take that role that Pearlberg usually has, and it's great to see that if one player has a bad game, there's still two or three other ones that can step up and easily, you know, sweep another team. I mean, it was very close in the first two sets. The Titans finally cleaned things up in the third set, and it's just great to see from the Titans. They will head to Stevens Point next, I believe, which is actually their community night. So that will be a very interesting game on the road.
Yeah, and Stevens Point, I think one of the better I haven't looked at the standings in a little bit, but one of the better teams in the WIAC Conference for volleyball.
Yeah, they are first overall in the WIAC Conference. They're 4-0 on the conference schedule. Oshkosh is 3-1 in second place. But Stevens Point is a very confusing team. They've been up and down. They beat number 4 Whitewater 3-2 on the road, but then fell to number 8 Washington University in St. Louis 3-1. So they can beat good teams, but they also kind of get swept or easily beaten by other good teams. So I'm not exactly sure which Pointers team we're going to see come out in that game against Oshkosh.
And I'm sure Stevens Point could probably say the same thing about Oshkosh. I mean, we go into Platteville, we get swept there. Edgewood swept us at the Kauf Sports Center. And again, those are games that on paper the Titans should have had no problem with. But we've also talked about how the expectation for these girls is, I mean, way up there considering how good this program is historically. And going back to your point on the disappointing performance, or, you know, some of the disappointing performances that we'd like to see a bit better, I think this team can afford some duds from some of their star players because, again, they are loaded. They have so much depth on that roster. Any girl that steps on that court for this team can definitely contribute in a big way. We have 45 seconds left, so real quick, little bonus segment here. The World Series has been set. The Yankees and the Dodgers, it will be Friday, October 25th. I got that wrong. I said Thursday going into break. It is Friday, October 25th. I knew it was the end of the week. But Yankees and Dodgers, MLB definitely gets its desired World Series because the New York and L.A. markets are obviously some of the biggest in the MLB.
Yeah, rematch from the 1981 World Series. That was the last time they've played in the World Series against each other. Very disappointing series, and then Dodgers-Mets won. It was pretty much all Dodgers. What really stunk is that whatever team took the lead first ended up winning. It was basically a home run fest. And on the other side, the Guardians, they're